And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Differences Matter. Each of my guests will explain why differences, some of them small, matter in the outcome. My first guest is a nationally recognized voice of weight loss through healthy living. He's a motivational speaker, physical conditioning coach, nutritional specialist. He discussed his latest book, Diet Free for Life. My second guest is a recognized thought leader, a speaker, a mentor, coach on business strategy and IP management. We discussed his latest book, Agility, Competing and Winning in a Tech-Savvy Marketplace. My next guest is one of the country's leading authority on world's religions. He will be going to discuss the world's largest eight religions and why the differences between them matter. He believes to not acknowledge these differences between religions is dangerous and disrespectful. We'll find out why. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Stephen Perothro is a professor in the Department of Religion at Boston University, where it is snowing today. He's the author of numerous books, most recently, God is Not One, The Eight Rival Religions That Run the World and Why Their Differences Matter, and the New York Times bestseller list, best-selling book, Religious Literacy, What Americans Need to Know. He's commented on religion on dozens of national public radio programs, on television, on CNN, NBC, MSNBC, Fox, and PBS. He's also been the guest on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, The Colbert Report, and The Oprah Winfrey Show. Stephen is a regular contributor to a variety of print media, including The Wall Street Journal, USA Today, New York Times, Slate. Just suffice it to say that he is very, very well respected in the industry. In 2010, he was invited to speak about world religions at, of all places, the White House. Stephen received his BA at Yale University in American Studies and his PhD in the study of religion from Harvard. He now lives in Cape Cod, where it is snowing. Welcome to the show, Stephen. How are you today?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being here. Now, according to many popular religion writers, all religions are just different paths to the same God. This is the concept that you call God. You think and you play, and you call this really groupthink when it comes to God. You claim that this is a nice sentiment, but it's dangerous, it's disrespectful, and it's untrue. Those are pretty powerful words. Why do you say that?
Well, the untrue is the easiest part, because I think, I was told when I was an undergraduate and a graduate student by a lot of people that the religions were basically the same, but the religious people I knew seemed to be believing very different things and doing very different things. And so the more I looked at religions in my own career as a religious studies professor, the more I became convinced that they were really quite essentially different, and that there was something, in a way, standing in the way of interreligious understanding because of this false view that the religions are all basically the same. And as you said in the setup, you know, it's a kind of a nice sentiment, but it's a pretty unsturdy foundation on which to build a relationship across the religions when you're basically pretending that they have a lot more in common than they really do.
I see. All right. And the fact is that they don't. So let's, if you wouldn't mind, giving my listeners just a real brief lesson in world religions, the eight major world religions that you write about in your book, God is Not One. And each of them has a little different slant. So if you wouldn't mind, tell us what those religions are and their slant on achieving the end goal of what the religion is teaching.
Yeah, well, one thing that I always do when I talk about the world's religions in classes is I make the point that they all agree that something's gone wrong with the world. But as soon as they start to describe exactly what's gone wrong, they diverge pretty markedly. So they all have this task of essentially defining the human problem. So Christianity, for example, is going to say that the human problem is sin. And then the Christian religion is going to resolve to get about the task of getting rid of sin and offering salvation, which is the eradication of sin. And that brings in the person of Jesus, who is seen as the Son of God, and the death of Jesus on the cross, etc. But that all revolves around the idea that the problem is sin, which goes back to Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden and the Great Fall and all that stuff. But in Buddhism, for example, to take another tradition, the problem isn't sin at all. The problem is suffering, human suffering. And the question then becomes, okay, not how do we get salvation, how do we get to heaven, but how do we eliminate human suffering? And that's where Buddhists are going to develop over the millennia all these techniques of meditation, working with koans, etc., that are said to get rid of human suffering. So each of the major religions I look at, Islam, Christianity, Confucianism, Hinduism, Buddhism, along with some others, set up the problem in different ways. So Islam is going to say it's pride. Confucianism is going to say the problem is social disorder. Hinduism is going to say, oh, well, it's the fact that we keep being reborn over and over again, and we don't want to do that. And then, boom, off they go in very different directions, up, as I write, you know, very different mountains rather than just being different paths up the same mountain.
All right. Very intriguing. We're talking to Stephen Perothro, everybody. His book, God Is Not One, The Eight Rival Religions That Run the World and Why Their Differences Matter. And let's focus in on two that are very topical in the news right now, and that is the differences between Christianity and Islam. As you pointed out, Christianity, the problem there is sin, and the solution to the problem is we get salvation. In other words, if we're good in life, we get salvation, we get to go to heaven, we get to be with God, and things are great. With Islam, you mentioned the problem is pride, and the solution is submission. First of all, many of my listeners may not fully understand Islam, so if you could flesh that out just a little bit more, and then talk about why there's such a rub between Christianity and Islam over the their views of the world.
Right. Well, like you said, the problem in Islam is, in my view, pride or self-reliance, which is the notion that human beings can somehow get along and be happy and be successful in the world and into the afterlife on their own, that they don't need supernatural being of any sort, and they certainly don't need God. And all of the Quran is really designed, as the holy book of Islam, to remind human beings, hey, don't be proud, be humble. Don't believe that you can get along without God. That is the right way to ruin. Submit yourself to God. And so when you look at the sort of core techniques in Islam about how to make your way to God, beginning with, you know, five times a day prayer, they're all about submission. They're all about getting down, literally, in the case of prayer, before God, pressing your forehead to the floor and saying, you know, only God is great. Human beings are not great. And along with the other so-called five pillars of Islam, like the Hajj to Mecca and charity, and fasting, and the so-called testimony or the Shahada, I testify there is no God but God, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. All these five pillars are reminding human beings that they are subject to the authority of God, and that the way to happiness, both for individuals and society, is submission to God. So why are they? Why are Islam and Christianity at odds? Well, one thing is they actually share a lot. You know, they both come out of Judaism. They both have the idea that there's one God. They both believe that God acts in history. They believe that God is a lawgiver and God is a judge, that God created the world, that God will bring the world to an end, etc. But they then have very different scriptures, very different exemplars that they look to. And so in a way, it sort of has the quality of an intra-family fight rather than the quality of, you know, two families that are so different that they really can't be bothered to fight with one another.
Well, and I think that that's a good analogy. We're talking to Stephen Perothro, everybody, author of the book God Is Not One, Interfamily Fight. I like that. So it's sort of a fight between brothers within the same family. They just can't get along. They both come from the same, essentially, set of parents, but they just have completely different outlooks on the world. Now, if Islam's whole thesis is pride and the solution to the problem is submission, why then would Islam or Christianity, for that matter, why would it pursue aggressive tendencies towards other non-believers?
Well, the religions that are most successful in the world in terms of gathering numbers have always been the religions that go out and try to proselytize. They go out and try to spread the message, you know, and you have, in the Christian tradition, you have this idea of the Great Commission where Christians are told to go out and preach the gospel to all the corners of the earth, and Muslims have that same idea. Jews, which have a, you know, very small religion in terms of the world today, you know, have never really had that, or at least only in very small eras in Jewish history have they gone out and seen themselves as spreading the gospel, as it were. So that's one factor. The other is that, you know, a lot's at stake in these religious traditions. They think that they're describing the truth, and it's frankly, I don't know, sort of selfish to, if you believe you have the truth, to not want to go out and spread it. And so Muslims and Christians and Buddhists have classically gone out and tried to tell the story that they have and solve the problem that they're trying to solve and try to spread the benefits of that to as many people as possible.
All right. We're talking to Stephen Perothro, and I'm going to change subjects on you just a little bit, Stephen, here with the next question, and that is, how much of the world's religious misunderstandings result from the practitioners of those religions worshiping the religion rather than worshiping their God?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. I think that it's easy to lose sight of why you're doing something once you get in the middle of it, and that's true with politicians as well as with religious people. You know, you have inside all these traditions, certainly all the ones that I describe in my God Is Not One book, you have ethical reasons and theological reasons to act kindly toward other people, not least because God, in the case of, say, Judaism and Christianity and Islam, is the person who has the full knowledge that you, by definition, don't have. So who are you to go out and impose it on other people, or who are you to imagine that your particular way of seeing the world is kind of a God's eye view, right? Mm. And that can lead us then to a different kind of pride, which is the sense that, hey, you know, my theology is the same as God's theology, and yes, losing the forest for the trees, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me ask you another question, because I find it ironic. American society is viewed worldwide as one of the most religious countries in the world, and yet we know very little about not only other world religions, but even the own Christian sects within our own religion. What does that say about the American people, that we can be both considered the most religious and also the most naive about the other religions?
Well, you're nice to set up my prior book, because my last book was called Religious Literacy, and that was the argument of that book, that America is one of the most religious countries on earth, and yet Americans know almost nothing about, you know, their own religions or the religions of other people. And, you know, that could be a problem just for, you know, religious types, say Jews who are trying to raise their kids to be Jewish, or evangelicals who are trying to raise their kids knowing something about the Bible. But in a country where religion is so frequently evoked in American politics, we really need to know about religion to make sense of certainly the American political landscape, but also the wider world, not least Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, even in the news today, you have Sarah Palin, who's seizing on this debate and controversy about the shootings in Arizona to portray herself as a victim of what she called blood libel, that people are coming after her and falsely accusing her of murder. And, you know, that's a term from Jewish history when Jews were accused by Christians of ritually murdering Christians and then drinking their blood. That's a kind of an argument that you can't really follow unless you know something about the history of Judaism and Christianity.
Well, let me just follow on with that line of reasoning, if I can, Stephen, for just a minute. Then, are we as Americans foolish to deny the differences between these religions? And how is that expressed in our foreign policy?
Yeah, I think the foolishness about denying the differences can be seen from a couple angles. You know, one is that it makes it really hard for us to understand and appreciate the unique beauty of each of these traditions, right? If we imagine that, oh, I'm a Christian, and really there isn't any difference between Christianity and Taoism, then what's the point of reading the Tao Te Ching or reading the Chuanzi, which is another scripture in Taoism, to see what kind of insights they might bring? Mm. But the other more dangerous problem is that it leads us to imagine that, you know, going off and marching into Iraq or Afghanistan is going to be a lot easier than it actually is, because if the world's religions are essentially the same, then there isn't going to be any particularly strong religious barrier to us interacting with, working with, militarily, socially, people in Afghanistan and Iraq. But of course, we've figured out that isn't true, that the people there, are not only are they Muslims, but in many cases, but they are Shia and they are Sunni. And just as the Muslims don't get along with the Christians, the Shia don't get along with the Sunni. And so failing to see those distinctions really makes it impossible to understand the world, whether it's the Middle East, as I was just talking about, or whether it's Kashmir between India and Pakistan, or whether it's Sri Lanka or Tibet or wherever it might be. You know, religious beliefs matter, religious practices matter, and the differences matter, at least to those who are involved in these religious traditions.
And we're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking to Stephen Perothro, everybody, author of the book God Is Not One, The Eight Rival Religions That Run the World and Why Their Differences Matter. Stephen, if people are interested in what you have to say, want to learn more about you, want to learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, they can go to my website, stephenperothro.com, and that's S-T-E-P-H-E-N-P-R-O-T-H-E-R-O, stephenperothro.com. They can look there, and they can also go to Boston University's Department of Religion website. That's where I teach, and they can get an idea of what I'm writing and teaching nowadays.
Well, fantastic. You're just a great guest. Thank you, Stephen, so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We will talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Stay warm.